As a public transit goer in Toronto, I know the ride to wherever I'm going is the beginning of the assault. Wherever my eyes happen to fall, from the subway stairs and platforms to the buses and the bus shelters to nearby garbage and recycling bins, I can't avoid it. Advertising, ads plastered everywhere. And no more just posters and bumper stickers on the buses. Now they are shrink-wrapped in advertising, unrecognizable as public vehicles. And when you add all of this to the already ubiquitous billboards, graffiti, public service announcements, and anything else that can be painted, stapled, or hammered onto a public surface, it seems like there is no neutral space left. It is visual litter, and every city in the country has its own version of it. Now, as I quite often do when I'm confounded by something, I decided to consult my younger, smarter cousin, Robert Enright, who has been doing some deep thinking on the subject. Robert is editor-at-large for the art and culture magazine Border Crossings, and he's in our Winnipeg studio this morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael.
I want to talk about visual litter, and you call me a curmudgeon. You don't agree with my contention that we're assaulted by visual litter? What about Winnipeg?
Well, we are assaulted by it, and Winnipeg is obviously a much smaller metropolitan center than Toronto or New York or London or Paris, but it has its bad moments. There's no doubt about that. And I wouldn't pretend for a moment that a lot of what we're obliged to see as we ride buses or drive cars or even walk as kind of, you know, quick study flaneurs, which is what we've all become now in urban centers, a lot of it is, it can be pretty ugly. But I have a kind of a different take on ways in which you can become, develop a kind of, and this is a bad pun, a kind of literacy, in that you can find ways to read that space. And I think that the people who've taken a lead in doing that are not urban planners or advertisers necessarily, but I think artists have a really interesting take on what you can do in those urban spaces to try and, in a sense, literally make sense and structure that chaotic experience that we all of us do encounter whenever we walk down a street in any city in Canada or anywhere else in the world, I suspect.
But we're talking about public space here, right? Mm-hmm. We're talking about streetscapes and open public areas.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Well, I mean, you know, space is a commodity, and we shouldn't be surprised to find that as a commodity, it is therefore for sale. And so advertisers and the people who hire them to try and sell whatever their products may be just love the idea that they can add to the kind of visual concatenation that is a contemporary city. I mean, cities are themselves collages in a way. I mean, they're collages of architectural styles. They're collages of different sort of cultures that encounter one another there. And so the idea that we find a kind of collaging of images inside that space not only shouldn't come as a surprise to us, but is a kind of inevitability, especially because, as I say, this space is, in a sense, up for grabs. I mean, whoever can buy the billboards or can plaster the city with its imagery is most successful at selling their product. And so that's what's being sold, in a sense. The public space, alas, is up for sale. There are cases where, I mean, here in Winnipeg right now, there's a very controversial idea of putting condos in Assiniboine Park, which is a park which is dedicated and is much loved by Winnipeggers. And the new mayor has suggested that this is perhaps something we should do. And it's obviously a very contentious issue, because the sense that you would take a park area and develop it in that way is something that is deeply unattractive to a lot of Winnipeggers, I think, and probably would be to people in any city when you have these spaces that are set aside that you can get outside of that visual clutter that you're talking about.
Is there such a thing as neutral space in our city?
That's a good, I think probably not, almost. I mean, there are park spaces, and I think they are neutral. And the more, I mean, Central Park in New York even is that, and it's such a widely and wonderfully used thing. And if you think of when Christo and Jean-Claude did the Gates Project mm-hmm. this past year, I mean, the big issue there was, what will this do to the park? And New Yorkers are probably more sensitive to the necessity of Central Park as a space to get away from the city at the same time that you are literally in its center, its core. It becomes an important space. And parks like Assiniboine Park here are equally important to Winnipeggers. And I think that every city has that kind of space. And it seems to me that those have to be sacrosanct spaces. And I guess they're neutral in that they're left uncluttered. But when you get into the core of pretty well any city, I don't think there exists space that isn't somehow intervened with by other factors, economic, political, or just sort of the social and urban development things that happen inside any city. So neutral space, I don't think so. And what would we want neutral space in the cores of our cities for? I'm a kind of an urban romantic. I've come to this late, but I really love the buzz that comes out of this idea that the city is a space in which we can literally apprehend all of what our cities are. They become, mm-hmm. in a sense, you know, palimpsests that each generation layers another layer of the city. And so in that sense, it plays off of that idea that we reinscribe and we rewrite our urban contemporary history as we go along. I actually find that quite an exciting process, really.
But it can get overwhelming. I'll give you an example. Times Square in New York. When I went there as a kid, there was the camel sign that blew the smoke, and there was the Coca-Cola sign, right. And it was neon, and you couldn't imagine Times Square without those signs. I went back a couple of years ago, and there are more and more and more, and it's almost overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
The Sony sign and the Toys R Us, and all of that.
Yeah.
There's a tipping point where it becomes too much of a muchness, isn't it?
Well, I think that does happen. It's funny you'd mention Times Square, because one of the most successful photographers who's dealing with precisely those issues in Montreal and in New York and in Warsaw, where he spends a lot of time in each of those cities, is a Canadian photographer named Robert Walker. And Walker, a couple of years ago, did a book called Color is Power, which is really his documentation of that urban clutter. He's a great photographer, and what he does is he goes to those very places you're talking about, and through the eye of an artist, finds ways to, in a sense, make a structure out of that chaos. And the way that he does it is by using interrupted images and by allowing the space to speak the way it actually is, so that you see those very Coca-Cola signs. And he'll do a wonderful thing where there'll be one of those containers for the giveaway papers in New York that has the Great American Back Rub on it. And what comes with that is the sign of a man rubbing a woman's back in silhouette. And then just above him, in this particular photograph I'm thinking about, there's a guy on it who's putting another sign in somewhere, and he stands above that box about the same scale because he's further back in space. But all of Walker's photographs look like they're just all frontal, like they don't have any deep recessive space. They're all layered and collaged in that way. And it's a beautiful photograph, and it makes you begin to reimagine how the space can be perceived then. It isn't just about clutter. It's about finding those connections and literally making them for yourself.
Thank you, sir. It's good to talk to you again.
It's good to talk to you, Michael.
We'll be in touch.
We will.
Robert Enright is editor-at-large for the art and culture magazine Border Crossings and recent recipient of the Order of Canada. He was in our Winnipeg studio this morning.